This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thank you for joining us on a, well, a brisk winter day. Things are getting better across the state of North Dakota. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. And, of course, today we're reminding you that we are in our short and sweet membership drive. And that's just a way to tweak your memory that this is member-supported radio. The listeners are great, but the members make a network possible and Main Street possible. So if you've got, you know, a moment, you might reach for the phone before we start our interview and give us a call at 800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org and click on Donate, or you can text the word support to 484848 and follow the link we send. But we're going to start today with a really interesting story and project. Teresa Perleberg is with us. Teresa, thanks for being here.
It's good to be here.
And Christy Armbrust.
Thank you.
The two of them are Shepherd Industries, and they got a project ahead of them. They have taken over the Nome Schoolhouse and are going to create what, Chris?
We are creating a facility like none other in the world. It's going to have a bed and breakfast. It's going to have a full-service processing mill, retail store, event center, a small herd of fiber animals out back. We're going to be doing weddings.
Teresa, describe the condition of the Nome Schoolhouse.
Well, part of the school is in really good condition, and it has all the old woodwork and the windows, the woodwork around the windows. But there's part of the back part where the roof leaked, where the floors have actually caved in. So some of it is really good and others not so good.
It hasn't been used as a schoolhouse for about 50-plus years. I mean, it was built in 1916. It closed in 1966, so it's been vacant for a long time, except for somebody looks like – so I've been online to your Facebook page. Look up Nome Schoolhouse on Facebook and you'll see what I mean. They've got some walkthrough demonstrations of what the project will be, and you can see that somebody might have been nesting there for a while.
Yes, there was the owner that owned it after they decommissioned it. His daughter was living there for a couple years, we hear. So she had a little makeshift kitchen there, and they were using the classrooms as closets and bedrooms and so on and so forth.
Well, we'll get back to the school, but let's get to the listeners in on what you do. Christy, what is the nature of your business?
I own Dakota Fiber Mill, and since 2010 have been processing wool, alpaca, all types of fiber for my customers from all over the nation. They ship me their raw fiber and I turn it into yarn and ship it back to them, and they pay me per pound to do so.
Well, you live right outside of Kindred.
I do.
Raise sheep and alpaca, right?
I do, but I've had camel, I've had yaks, I've had goats, you name it, I've had all. If it grows good fiber, I've raised it.
Well, I like to Google. I Googled you, and I came across this neat story in the forum from a few years back. The mechanical engineering students at NDSU created a felting machine for you.
Yes, they did. They created a amazing felting machine that Teresa and myself have been making and producing projects out of it, and we're using wool and other fibers that wouldn't normally be used, the shortcuts and so on and so forth, and we felt it, and we're making products out of it.
Well, Teresa, you have Bear Creek Felting, and there's a website, bearcreekfelting.com. You live by Fort Ransom. Describe what you do.
Well, I have a flock of 100 sheep. And I use their wool to make needle-felted sculptures.
Needle-felted – and people need to Google this. They need to go to bearcreekfelting.com because these are nifty little animals you've got.
Yeah. It just starts out as wool roving, and I use a needle with little barbs in it to pull the wool into itself. So it's like sculpting an entire sculpture out of wool with the needle.
You got elephants. You got all kinds of animals there. And they really look fantastic. So how did the two of you get together?
Chris has processed my wool for my sheep for me for about 8 years. And so we've been working together already for 8 years. And Chris is the one that came up with the idea for us to partner. I was struggling to keep up with, I need, I people would buy the wool if I had more ready to sell and more colors and things. And so we just decided that we would work well together and grow our businesses even bigger.
Well, the Nome Schoolhouse is in Barnes County. It's not too far from Fort Ransom, where you are, Chris, and it's a little further from Fort Ransom, where you are, Teresa. Is the idea to move your operations there?
Absolutely. Yep. My mill will be moved there. It'll be in the basement level. And then Teresa will have her art studio and we'll be working together. I'll continue to process for other folks also, but our main focus will be our own line of yarn and rovings for our customers.
Now, I do encourage people to look at the Nome Schoolhouse on Facebook because, again, you will see all these images there and you'll get an idea of how big a task this is going to be. How are you funding this?
Oh, we have secured some very large loans and we will be doing some fundraising also so folks can help on the project.
Well, give us a sense of the kind of work that needs to be done, Teresa.
Well, we do have a construction manager, and right now we're just working with them and the architects and the engineers to see all that needs to be done. We do need to pretty much gut out most of it. We're going to save the woodwork and put it back. We need to put – none of the walls are insulated, and it needs all new electrical and plumbing as well.
So. Not minor items there.
No.
And this is a schoolhouse, so it's brick and it's, was built over 100 years ago. So what is your interest in sort of maintaining the integrity of the look?
Well, we want to keep the outside looking exactly like it was. Because we love the way it looks. We're going to have to replace the windows, all of them, but we're going to keep the same look. We're going to try and keep the classrooms as much as they look as they do now. Try to move there's chalkboards in all of them, and we would like to preserve those and all the woodwork.
So a big project ahead of you. You hope to open in 2020. Are you still...
Oh yes, I'm hoping we're on that schedule. Yeah.
Well, I went online and did a little research about Nome, North Dakota, and the school was certainly built during its heyday because back in around 1916, it would have had probably its peak population, which was not quite 300 people.
This is true. It did have a car dealership.
Well,
among other things.
And it had a school at one time.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. But back in 2016, the population was estimated at 60.
Yep.
So you're creating a destination for Nome.
Yes. And right now we are going to be having folks come in from all over the world, actually, to work with Teresa and attend our retreats and – so on and so forth, not just from the Dakotas. They're coming from all over.
That's because this school will have a couple of bed and breakfast rooms, right?
About 18,
wow,
yes.
Wow, that's quite a few.
Yep.
Well, that's ambitious. That's like a motel about the size of Nome.
Yeah.
So the structure has some problems. The interior is a mess, and you've got to heat it.
Yes.
You've got to air condition it. This is, 2019.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It'll have new HVAC system everywhere. We're fortunate enough that there are cold air returns that are built into the middle of the school that we'll be able to run new ducting and whatnot through without disturbing any of the original walls.
Well, Teresa, I took one of those video tours. You have a couple of them actually up there. And there are blackboards in the rooms. There are these hardwood floors, some of which have buckled a bit. So a lot of refinishing work ahead.
Yes. Yeah, the floors need a little bit of work, but we're going to save the floors. And, like I said, try to remove the chalkboards and put them back on after we get the insulation and things.
Well, the school actually had a gymnasium added to it about the time I came onto this earth, 1949. It's a ways back. And that is a very big space, which also needs a lot of work. What's the vision for that?
That's going to be our event center. We are it's big enough to have about 250 guests seated. So, and we're going to cover the walls with photographs of alumni and the past and some of the history of Nome. And we're hoping to bring back the original scoreboard and just fun things like that.
So an event center, you're talking about weddings?
And absolutely. Weddings, reunions, craft shows, meetings, conferences, you name it.
Well, I can think of one obvious one. It's an all-school reunion for Nome.
Absolutely, yes. Our first event we're hoping for this fall is going to be a school carnival.
Well,
of course.
Teresa, have you heard from any alumni of the Nome School?
Oh, yes. There's a lot of the alumni on Facebook that are very active. We've gotten to know them really well. And, yeah, that's been really fun, just hearing their memories and things that they're sharing. Every time I post a picture, they share some memories for us, which we really enjoy.
Now, where are all the sheep and the alpaca going to be?
Well, we only plan to have a few there just for learning purposes. But behind the school, we're going to use a barn that's back there.
And that barn is not part of the school?
No.
So are you leasing it, or how does that happen?
Yes, we have an agreement with the farmer that is right next to the school is going to let us use the barn and the adjacent pasture land.
Again, when I went through the Facebook tour, the roof is a problem, correct?
Correct. On one part, it actually has failed, and thus the floor trusses then have caved in. And we're a little concerned that some of those outside walls might be compromised once we remove the rest of the interior floor trusses. But we have an excellent structural engineer on board that will be walking us through.
So this is a major building project, and I suspect that this is your 2019 is your big build year, I take it.
Correct. Yes. We're hoping to start the major construction in June to have all the demo work and whatnot done by June.
And how many people do you expect to be involved in this?
Oh, there will be crews of many. Absolutely, yes.
Now, you mentioned that you were going to move your businesses to this site, but are you keeping – you're not bringing all the sheep, not all the alpaca. They're going to be at the home?
Correct. Yep, correct.
In Fort Ransom and Kindred, that area?
That is correct, okay. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So this is ambitious.
And daunting, to say the least.
Well, I have you mortgaged your souls on this thing? I mean, you've got a big loan and a
yeah,
vision and,
absolutely,
you know, a lot of hope, I assume.
Yeah, we've been led into this. The doors have opened. There's been so much prayer that has led us to continue success is imminent. We are not scared of, is this going to succeed or is this going to actually come to be? We know it is.
Well, of course, you're talking about the fiber arts here, so let's get into that a bit more. This is something I don't know much about. Describe for our listeners the range of things we're talking about here.
So there would be knitting, crocheting, weaving, needle felting, anything like that has to do with fiber. We're going to have retreats and bring teachers in and have classes. And, you know, there'll be week-long retreats and weekend retreats. And I also have developed kits on how to needle felt, and I have an online academy. And so that would give them the opportunity to come and work with me in person.
And the plan, I think, is to have an online presence too. I mean, you already do, but
just to expand that. Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
Give us a sense of what the vision for that is.
We are going to be developing right now I have a line of yarn called Dakota Spun, and we're just going to grow that and sell that online along with more wool, more colors, more kits, souvenirs, memorabilia from the school, so on and so forth.
So what are the special qualities of Dakota wool? I assume this is a market that has some competition.
It does, but the type of wool that Teresa raises, Romney, you should really talk on that.
Well, the Romney wool that we raise is really I have found to be the best for needle felting. And so anybody that follows me online or has purchased from me is looking for more of the same because they've come to love it. So that would mean more sheep and more processing. So that's where it all comes together.
What is Romney wool?
Romney is a breed of sheep that we raise. So, and they're noted for they have a longer staple length of their fiber, and it's really works really well for felting.
And what kind of processing does the wool have to go through?
So we just, after it's sheared from the sheep, we'll skirt it. That means just taking all the stuff that would be on their bellies or that would be dirty, and we take that off, and then I get handed over to Chris.
And she felts it?
Nope.
It's a 9-step process is what it goes through. Of course, I further monkey pick it and take out all of the bits of hay and so on and so forth. I hand wash it. Then we pick it. Then we cart it. And then we felt it if we're going to felt it. Or we pin draft it, spin it, and ply it if we're going to continue on, you know, and make it into yarn. And these are all done on big, large commercial machines, textile machines.
And you have to dye it too, don't you?
After that, we can dye it. Of course, we can always dye it in a raw wool form and then card it dyed. Dyeing can come in at many different times.
Well, the important thing here is that this is value added. What you're doing here, you're harvesting the wool, but then you're making it into something considerably more valuable, right?
This is true. Absolutely.
And there's a business here.
Yes. Both of us have been very successful, thank God, with our businesses. And they are continuing to operate now as we are renovating the school. And, yeah, and they're just going to grow.
So you're opening in 2020. Mm-hmm. Any idea when in 2020?
We're hoping the first part of the year, January, February.
A nice cold time of the year.
Yeah, you know, but there again, we're not just all about fiber. Snowmobilers can come, stay in the B&B, snowmobile right from the school, hit the trails, do backcountry. Hikers, we're just a couple miles from Little Yellowstone and all their trails, and bikers and outdoor enthusiasts of all types. Not just fiber, but...
And you've got a B&B, so somebody's cooking, right?
You bet.
My daughter, Libby, has been wanting to be a chef, and so that's where she fits into the whole picture. She's going to make the food, the breakfasts, and then if they stay for the weekend, she'd be making the other meals as well.
Now, if you Google Nome, you'll get some photographs, and it looks like it, you know, it doesn't have a lot of pavement, does it? Any?
It's paved, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes, yes.
The main road.
The main road.
32.
Yeah, it's just a little block of gravel up to the school.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not hard to get to Nome, I take it.
No, very, very easy.
So that does make it attractive then in terms of an out-of-the-way place that isn't too far out of the way.
Correct. We're less, you know, about 50 minutes from Fargo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 15 miles from the interstate.
Yes.
So you've got this business model out there. When do you think you will have settled the bills? What's your plan?
Well, we have about a 15 to 20 year plan on getting everything paid off, but it's all good.
All right. Well, it's called the Nome Schoolhouse. It's on Facebook, and Shepherd Industries, I assume that's your joint company. That's a logical name since you both are shepherds in a sense.
Correct. Yeah.
And you are harvesting, I guess, the product that your animals are creating for you. This is going to be a fiber mill, a traditional arts facility, a community center, a bed and breakfast, lots of stuff. And it's certainly a big change for Nome, North Dakota. So thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yes.
Teresa Perleberg is behind Bear Creek Felting. Find out more about that at BearCreekFelting.com. And Christy Armbrust is with the Dakota Fiber Mill. And she lives outside of Kindred. And together, they're Shepherd Industries. And again, go to that Nome Schoolhouse on Facebook to see the kind of challenge they've set out for themselves. Teresa, Christy, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
More Main Street in a moment.
Coming up this week on the Thomas Jefferson Hour, we speak to President Jefferson about the importance of freedom of the press.
He was a little prickly, like all presidents, about the press that was so hard on him and he thought unfair. But as he, I think, wisely understood, that comes with the territory. That's the cost of human liberty.
Join us on this week's Thomas Jefferson Hour.
Sunday at 11 Central, 10 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public.
Well, this is Main Street on Prairie Public, and we are in our short and sweet membership drive. And Bill Thomas is with me, our director of radio, to remind our listeners of how this system is sustained.
Yes, it is sustained by contributions from listeners and other things, too. But that's the biggest part of our sustainability is the listener support. It's the biggest chunk of our income budget, and of course it's got a stability that some of the other sources don't have. So it's great that we get grants from elsewhere, but the listener support is just so important. And, you know, when I listen to things like the interview about this fascinating project in Nome with turning a school into a fiber arts.
Yeah, Teresa and Christy were really, you know, they're energized.
Yeah,
they're ready to do this.
Yeah.
And well, it's a big job.
And so it's so great that we've got a place we can tell people about that kind of thing. And that's possible because listener support makes this kind of programming possible. So we are encouraging people to make a contribution to the budget to keep it going.
And, of course, Prairie Public is the home base for the Jefferson Hour.
Oh, yes.
And that's a Sunday staple, and Clay Jenkinson's been doing this for years and has gotten kind of a nationwide, international following.
Yes, frequently cited by people who make a contribution to Prairie Public. So you can do that now. You can support the Jefferson Hour. You can support talking about this Nome School project and all the other different things that Main Street talks about here with Doug and Ashley. And you can support that by calling right now and making a contribution, 800-359-4145. Or you can go on the web, prairiepublic.org.
Yeah, just click on donate, or you can text support to 484848 and then follow the link that we send you, and everybody will be happy because you'll be a member. Or maybe you will have increased your membership because, of course, expenses go up year to year to year, whether or not, you know, other sources of income do or not. That's why we come to members. We ask our listeners, you're listening right now, right, to become members. And it's the short and sweet membership drive because
Yes, there is an additional element of escalation of happiness that comes with this membership drive at this time of year. Valentine's Day is coming up, so we have a tradition around this time of year that as a thank you gift, instead of sending out a mug or a T-shirt or a hat, those are all fine, you know, those different things, but we send out, if you pledge $10 a month, a one-pound box of just really wonderful, scrumptious.
A pound.
Hand-rolled cocoa truffles. Yeah, a pound sounds serious. And it is. It's like, this is like some serious good food here. This is really wonderful Valentine's Day thing. So we'll send that out. We'll send it to your house if you want. And that is indeed where most of them go. You can also send it someplace else. You know, so say you've got a grandchild or a child who's away somewhere and you want to remember them for Valentine's Day. I've done this myself. Send them a box of cocoa truffles from Nicole's. And if they're at college, they will their popularity will increase.
And, of course, they're sent in a beautiful silk box.
Oh, yeah.
With a beautiful ribbon around it. It's very elegant. It says Valentine's Day in a very emphatic way. And that's just for $10 a month. And for $15 a month, you can get two boxes. For $20 a month, three boxes. You can do the math. It's wonderful math.
Yeah.
And, of course, it happens if you call 800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org, click on donate, or text support to 484848 and follow our link. Coming up on Main Street, Dave Thompson will be here for our weekly discussion of the news headlines, and Matt Olin will review a new movie. This week it's Stan and Ollie. First, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. A House committee is studying a bill that would make candidates for local offices declare a party or declare as an independent. Right now, those offices are considered to be nonpartisan. The supporters of the bill say voters have a right to know how local candidates' ideologies would translate into votes. They say it's a matter of transparency. Bismarck Republican Representative Mike Nathy is one of the bill's sponsors. He says the local elected officials need to be held to the same standards as legislators and statewide office holders.
You know, we set policy, we set tax policy, we collect tax money, we spend tax money. No different than the political subs and people in the counties and cities. They do the same thing that we do. So my question is, why are they exempt from the transparency and openness that we are held at?
A number of city and county officials testified against the measure. Minot City Councilman Shannon Strait told the House Government and Veterans Affairs Committee that he was a part of an effort dubbed Make Minot that made substantial changes to the form of Minot City government, such as reducing the size of council and giving the mayor a vote on the council. Strait says he thinks party labels would get in the way of engaging his city's voters.
Party affiliation tends to place people in political camps that have little to do with local decision making. HB 1375 would only further exacerbate political division, and the skepticism of government. The success of Make Minot was less about R and D or I and more about we and us.
The committee has not taken action on the bill. North Dakota's economy fell below growth neutral in January. Creighton University economics professor Dr. Ernie Goss says North Dakota's rating on the Business Conditions Index fell to 49.8 in January from 52.6 in December. Any reading above 50 on the index indicates economic growth. Goss says North Dakota's economy did slow down, but he expects it will move sideways or slowly upward in the next 3 to 6 months. He says the overall economy is expanding, but at a very slow pace. Goss says North Dakota's economy faces some challenges in the months ahead.
About approximately 48% of supply managers said it's finding and hiring qualified workers, and that is true in North Dakota. It's true in the region. So that's number one challenge. Number two was tariffs and trade restrictions. That will be the other big challenge for the region and for the economy. But it came in a distant second to qualified workers. And that's not a new problem to North Dakota. It's not a new problem for the region. And it's going to be somewhat of an economic headwind for 2019.
Goss says a lot of what happens in the coming months will also depend a lot on oil prices, which currently hovers between $50 and $60 a barrel. And the North Dakota Department of Health is reporting widespread influenza activity across the state. Immunization Surveillance Coordinator Jenny Galbraith says this means more counties are reporting flu cases than aren't. As of today, there have been just over 1,800 confirmed cases of influenza in North Dakota. And Galbraith says many of those cases are in children. She says while it is never too late to get vaccinated against the flu, it does take 2 weeks for it to become effective. Nationwide, 185 child deaths have been attributed to the flu, and about 80% of those kids had not received their flu shots. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
Well, the sound of that vintage wire machine means it's time for a couple of well-seasoned news guys to talk about the big stories of the week. And, Dave, this is one that goes back to when you and I got into the business. That's abortion. It's always been a hot political issue.
It sure
issue.
Has been.
Human Dismemberment Abortion Bill. That's a pretty provocative title.
It is, and there was some description on the floor when they brought it up. But it overwhelmingly passed the House and now goes to the Senate. Now, already there is concern that type of abortion is already prohibited in North Dakota. And in North Dakota, clinics don't do any abortions after the 20th week. So there was some concern about that. But the sponsors of the bill said they introduced it to basically put a warning shot across the bow saying we don't accept this type of thing.
And Representative Mary Schneider of Fargo said she was hesitant to support the bill because
right.
there was no testimony from a medical representative.
Right. They had lots of testimony from religious representatives and some families and some advocates, but the medical community did not show up to testify.
Now, she also spoke up about this abortion reversal bill, which has passed the House.
Right. And that one is a little bit interesting because shall we say, some evidence apparently that abortion can be reversed if you're doing this chemical abortion. There are two drugs that you have to take. If you can get somebody between the first and second drug, you can stop the abortion process. That, according to the supporters of the bill. The opponents say there's not enough medical evidence to say this is happening, and they say it's just another way to try to get people to change their minds.
But it certainly is a provocative issue.
And it is, and it will continue to be.
Yeah. Senate, you had this story, David, has rejected a Social Security and child care tax breaks.
I was kind of surprised by that, but some of the arguments against it was that already income to $25,000 is exempt or $32,000 if you're a married couple. And they say the people who would benefit most out of that would be more of the wealthy people. And yet there are some of the people who supported the bill saying, hey, this is a message you can send to people who might want to move to Arizona or someplace that doesn't tax Social Security at all. Maybe you keep them in North Dakota and keep them around. They pay property taxes, and they can contribute to their communities.
And, of course, we do pay taxes on our federal taxes on Social Security.
That's what that we do.
The Senate has also rejected a bill that would allow companies that offer child care reimbursement to get a tax credit.
Right, and again, there's some concern about a fiscal note that was a little bit vague about how that might happen. And then there's still a contingent in the legislature that doesn't think that the state should be paying anything for child care. That's a matter for families to take care of.
Well, it's a pretty big bill. You certainly know that.
It's a very big bill, yes.
This we've talked about. Daniel Webster had this story just today. The Senate has now voted down restoration of the oil extraction tax rate, which is no surprise.
No surprise at all. I mean, when that happened in 2015, remember what they wanted to do. There was some concern that oil prices were dropping to the point where this trigger would go off and eventually that the extraction tax would go from the 6.5% to zero. So in a compromise worked out with the industry, Senator Dwight Cook and then Democratic Senator Connie Triplett from Grand Forks came up with a plan that they would reduce the rate to 5% and then take the triggers off. And the Democrats were saying, well, let's just raise it back to 6.5% because the oil industry is not going anywhere. But the opponents of that bill say, hey, there's the Permian Basin and there's some competition from us, some of these other shale plays across the United States.
Well, and we're reminded also that this started as an initiated measure back in 1980.
1980, Measure 6.
And yes. That set the 6.5% rate.
It did.
So the legislature changed it. And I think that's a source of controversy as
it
well.
It is always. If you think that the will of the people is being changed, then that's always a bit of controversy. But I haven't heard too much from average citizens about this.
No. As long as the money comes in, I guess.
I think that's probably it, yes.
You had this story on Monday, Dave. The Prairie Dog Bill sponsors hoping for movement in a House committee. That's a big infrastructure bill, isn't it?
It is the big infrastructure bill. That's the big one that takes and creates a new bucket of oil tax money to create a permanent fund for infrastructure for cities and counties. Basically, it's designed for the cities and counties and townships outside the oil patch because they've had surge funding and things like that. But anybody can apply for it or anybody can be, you know, access the dollars. But it's a way to add for things like curb and gutter in cities. I know that is Senator Wardner's pet project. But there's still some hesitancy in the House about it.
Well, let's talk about the ethics amendment to the state constitution. Earlier this week, I had Dina Butcher and Kathy Tweeten, two of the advocates for the amendment. And, of course, now it's in the legislature's ballpark to make it come to pass.
Right. And you have competing bills. The Senate has a bill introduced by Senator Mathern that would basically set up the committee right now and then work on it for 2 years. And then the House committee is huge. It's got like 47 pages on it. And the House is co-sponsored by the leadership of the House and Senate. What Senator Wardner said, and he's the leader of the Senate, he said what he'd like to do is take the best of both bills and combine them into one. And he believes that there will be a two-year study about writing rules, and it won't be fully implemented until 2 years from now.
So that's a little bipartisan because he's agreeing with Mathern there.
He is on that, yes.
Well, let's talk about this fee that has been passed by the Senate to electric and hybrid vehicles.
That's an interesting story because electric vehicles do not pay any gas tax. Where's the source of revenue for most road projects, especially highway projects, is gas tax. And so they're saying, hey, they should pay their fair share about it. And a lot of industry groups are saying, yeah, they should. So they came up with this $115 figure. And then if you're doing a hybrid, they came up with a $50 figure that would be paid for through your registration fees. So it's a way to make up some of that lost revenue.
Okay. But we all pay electric bills, too.
That we all do.
And so I guess maybe that wrinkle will get into the discussion at some point. North Dakota did not get a high grade in infrastructure from the American Society of Civil Engineers.
And I really am not surprised that it didn't. But one thing I was concerned about this, you know, we got an overall grade of C. But you see, the lowest grade was D-, and it had to do with dam safety, which I think should be a little bit concerning. Mm. That's not necessarily a state responsibility. That could be a shared responsibility with the federal government if you're talking about some of the larger dams on rivers that are especially navigable rivers. But, you know, that's a concern too. And some of the things that you might expect, the roads and the bridges are not yet up to snuff because there's a lot of need out there. And a lot of these bridges especially have some age on them and need replacement.
Okay. Well, let's finish with the possibility that the recommendation from the Higher Education Governance Task Force for three higher ed boards, one each for NDSU, UND, and for the 2 and 4 year colleges, might be two higher
it
education
boards.
It might
be two, boards. And it might be one with a change to the membership of the one. There are competing proposals out there. Now, we had Brad Beckett all talking about this too. Senator Joan Hackerman, who's on our legislative review show, has basically said, hey, maybe it's going to be one and you extend terms or maybe expand the board.
So
one, two, or three. That's basically it.
Okay. So that football will be thrown around a bit after the Super Bowl.
Oh, I think you're right.
Okay. We check in with our news director every Friday. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Doug.
It's our short and sweet membership drive here on Prairie Public, and that means Main Street, me and Ashley and Skip are asking you to consider supporting the program you're listening to right now. You know, Dave Thompson has been on the air with Prairie Public for 38 years. And Bill Thomas, that is the kind of longevity that makes him a unique resource.
He is often referred to as the dean of the Bismarck Press Corps, and he knows so much about what's going on in state government and all around the state and what has happened over the years, a lot of it that he's seen happen himself. He has a great memory for it. And so he is able to put our news stories today in context. He's not somebody who just got out of college and came here for a job and is like reporting on stuff that he doesn't know much about. He knows a lot. And not to disrespect new people, we need them too. But Dave's background knowledge is such an asset for us. And that is part of what you help support when you make a contribution to Prairie Public. We are asking people to make a contribution right now. It is our short and sweet membership drive, and we're asking you to call 800-359-4145. Go on the internet, prairiepublic.org, make that contribution, and we have a really nice way to say thank you.
You know, this show, Main Street, takes a lot of work. It's an hour each weekday from 3 to 4 Central, and it may sound a little more effortless than it is. Skip Wood, our producer, and Ashley Thornburg, who's a regular contributor, sits in for me as host on occasion, and of course is an assistant producer here too. We all wear a lot of hats. We keep busy because this show is important to us, and we think it's important to you too because you're listening right now. So if you're a listener and not a member, let me tweak your conscience just a little bit because you could be helping sustain what you're listening to. This is It Takes a Village time. So give us a call, 1-800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org. Click on donate or with that smartphone of yours, just text the word support to 484848. Follow the link we send and we'll be smiling because you're a member.
Now, Doug is tweaking your conscience, and I will alternatively not appeal to your conscience but to your sybaritic appetites.
Thank
because
you.
When you pledge $10 a month or more, not only is your conscience salved, but your taste buds are really stimulated by the thank you gift that we have, which is a one-pound box of cocoa truffles, hand-rolled, handmade, freshly made. She makes them up just for us from Nicole's Fine Pastry. This is wonderful Valentine's Day kind of stuff, wonderful Valentine's Day candy. And so if you make that contribution, $10 a month to Prairie Public, we'll send these truffles out wherever you say, anywhere in the continental U.S., and we'll even put in a lovely card, and Bobby will write a note in there of what you want written on the note, and you'll just be all set for Valentine's Day.
So this is our incentive for you to pick up that phone and get involved in what you're listening to. We love our listeners, I often say, but members make it possible. And maybe there's a listener out there who doesn't have the wherewithal that you know, and you can pay it forward for that person. Or maybe you are a member and you can increase your membership because, of course, our costs increase every year just like yours do. We're aware of that. Inflation creeps along and it affects public radio too. So give us a call, 800-359-4145, or go online to prairiepublic.org, click on donate. It doesn't take but a moment and it's critically important. Well, it's time to go to the movies with Matt O'Lean, and we're going to talk about Stan and Ollie. Stan Laurel and Oliver Hardy were mainstays of late-night TV when I was a kid because they would have been silent movie stars, and then they were in some early talkies as well, but as a comedy team.
Yeah, so this is directed by John S. Baird, a Scottish film director. And what works for the film, I think, mainly, Doug, is he focuses on only one part of their career. Too often biopics get caught up in an expansive amount of time in someone's life. And that leads to awkward things like old age makeup looking stupid and kind of these scenes that have to string together movement and passage of time. What he does here is he focuses on their tour of England and the UK in 1953 to make money. They did not own their pictures the way Chaplin and Harold Lloyd did. So they never got as rich as Chaplin and Lloyd did, and they still were making movies into the early 1950s. Now, they're older by this time. Hardy, you know, immensely overweight, starting to have health problems. But they concoct this tour to make money. And then basically they're doing a live act of a lot of their old movie routines. Steve Coogan plays Stan Laurel. People may remember Coogan from the Trip movies where he does Michael Caine impersonations with his friend Rob Brydon. And John C. Reilly in a tremendous performance as Hardy really does a nice job. So the performances really carry this film. There's nothing terribly exciting or interesting about the filmmaking technique. It's basically a standard biopic. But you really get a sense for their partnership, their strained partnership, which still is strained based on a movie that Hardy made with Harry Langdon in the late 30s, which comes up later in the film, and then they came back together. So the performances are tremendous, especially John C. Reilly. Some of the routines, Doug, that they do on stage are simply brilliant. The choreography, almost like a ballet that they had with each other, that they just perfected. They sing some of their old songs on stage, like the one from Way Out West, Commence to Dance and all that kind of thing. Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, they sing that as well. And the people love them, and eventually the crowds start to grow on the tour. But there's a bit of melancholy with this film. You can sense that this is maybe the last go-around for them.
And the sunset.
The sunset is coming. Hardy is not in good health. Stan is still working on a lot of their routines, but there's a strain in their relationship, but they are bound together by history, no question. I think it's worth a look for the two performances.
Well, I'm struck by how long these two people performed together. I mean, this was one of the longest duo acts around, isn't it?
Yeah, so Hal Roach put them together in the 20s. And they did not know each other. Stan Laurel came to the United States with Charlie Chaplin.
He was an understudy.
He was. He worked with Chaplin. He worked with an impresario named Fred Carno. And Hardy was just put with Laurel, and they had great silent films, but they really were almost better in sound films because they were so funny. And, you know, Hardy always played the guy who thought he was smart, but he wasn't. And Stan was an absolute buffoon and the problems they would get into. And if you watch this film now, you still see what made them great. It's still funny. The audience is chuckling at the routines they're doing. It's not like laugh out loud funny, but they're still chuckling at what was going on. I think it's a nice little film. I think in a less competitive Best Actor year, John C. Reilly could have maybe slipped in with a Best Actor nomination. He's really the heart and soul of the film. I liked him a little better than Coogan in the film because I still kind of see Steve Coogan. But, you know, Hardy was the more genial of the two men. He liked to get along with people. He had kind of a gambling problem at the horse track. That's talked about in the film. But this is worth a look, even if you don't really know much about Laurel and Hardy. I think it's a nice film.
I am intrigued by the time that this is set in, 1953. Mm-hmm. This is post-World War II Britain, which was still reeling from the devastation of that conflict. And so it would have been a kind of a tough place to be.
Yeah, and sometimes when they're doing their music hall performances, the crowds aren't great, and they're kind of wondering, and their manager may or may not be the best manager they ever had on this tour. I won't give away too much about that, but basically the heart of the film is in the right place. It's a genial film, a bit melancholy, a bit sad, but the thing that binds together this film is the two performances and really that Laurel and Hardy did love each other. They were completely tied together in history. Their films will be remembered. And I think people should go see this film.
Well, I did see the trailer for it. I'm really intrigued by it because, like I said, I've seen a few Laurel and Hardy movies. Mm-hmm. People my age couldn't miss them.
Right.
It's an intriguing story. Now, John C. Reilly and Steve Coogan are both Oscar nominees.
Yes, they are.
They haven't won the big one yet, but they're nominees. One of those two people named in the title was an Oscar recipient. Who was it?
Yeah, Stan Laurel got an honorary Oscar after Hardy passed away. I think 1960 he got an honorary Oscar.
1961 was my record.
That was when the award show would have been ceremony.
Yep.
And I also want to mention, Doug, opening today at the Fargo Theater, and please check listings because it is in wide release, at Eternity's Gate, Willem Dafoe as Vincent Van Gogh. He is up for Best Actor if you want to check your box and see all the Best Actor nominees.
I saw that trailer, too. Mm-hmm. Again, that looks very intriguing. He looks a lot like Van Gogh.
He's too old for the part, but apparently he's phenomenal in the role. So
we've been to the movies with Matt O'Lean.
When you hear arts programming here on Prairie Public, know that it is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, and we thank them.
This is Dakota Datebook for February 1st. On this date, about 12,000 years ago, and for that matter, just about every day for about 60,000 years, some interesting geological features were being created in North Dakota. They're called drumlins, small hills elongated in the direction of glacial movement. The typical drumlin is about 100 feet high and maybe 500 feet long and 200 feet wide, with a blunt nose in the direction from which the ice approached and a gentler slope in the back. In 1993, state geologist John Bloomley wrote about them. He had studied drumlins in Ireland, where they're quite common. They typically had a base of gravel and sand capped by glacial sediment. The drumlins in central North Dakota are similar, but they also have differences. The best developed are in McHenry County between Minot and Harvey. Bloomley observed that they range from hills like typical drumlins of Ireland to hills that are amazingly long. In 1987, he did a study of about 200 of the elongated drumlins between Verendry and Balfour. To the uneducated eye, they appear to be ridges. In Ireland, most drumlins are three times longer than they are wide. The McHenry County drumlins are more like 30 to 1, even 50 to 1. And then there's Hogback Ridge, which is 17 miles long and about 375 feet wide. That's a ratio of 240 to 1. The McHenry County drumlins run from northwest to southeast. They're so straight, they look like man-made. From the air, Hogback Ridge looks like a grade of a large railroad or highway. At one point, the locals took advantage of this and used a segment as a raised roadbed. Bloomley and his team made several excavations on Hogback Ridge. They decided it formed quickly, probably over a period of a year or two, and that it was shaped by a very rapidly flowing glacier. The movement scraped out a gouge or tunnel into the underside of the glacier. As it continued to move, those cavities got longer and longer. If the glacier had been thicker, the underground tunnel would have closed in with more ice, but that didn't happen. The space between the relatively thin glacier filled with a mush of glacial deposits mixed with sediment from a previous lake bottom. The weight of the glacier squeezed the mush upward to fill in the cavity, creating the amazingly long, straight ridges we know today. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Mary Helm. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Merrill Pepcorn is a very familiar voice on Prairie Public. He's the voice of Dakota Datebook. And, of course, before I took over this show about 7 years ago, he was doing the show called Hear It Now. Now it's called Main Street. And that means for 20-some years, there's been this hour in the afternoon, Bill Thomas, our director of radio, is with me, where we've had this public affairs, this kind of feature interest program that's been available to our listeners. And now we're reminding them that we're in our short and sweet membership drive, and we want listeners to get involved.
And you can do that by calling 800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org, click on donate, or on a cell phone. You can text the word support to 484848. You'll get a little link and click on it and go in, and you can do it that way. We're asking for you to make contributions because having this kind of radio does depend on people like you who listen and enjoy it and use it and learn from it and then support it. So you make that contribution to Prairie Public and you are serving yourself by helping to keep this programming that you use on the air. And Main Street, and before it, Hear It Now, is here for a specific reason, because we needed a place where we could talk to people about things that are going on in the region, something where we could – it's great to have the newscast and the stories that are in the newscast, but we needed a place where we could take more time to discuss things that are going on. And so that's why this program was established, to serve this region with information and discussion and all kinds of learning about what's going on here. So you support that when you call in or come in online with your pledge, 800-359-4145 or prairiepublic.org, or text the word support to 484848.
And we have a sweet incentive for you, because this is the short and sweet membership drive, and that incentive is a pound box of bittersweet truffle hand-rolled in cocoa powder with a touch of port from Nicole's Fine Pastry in Fargo, one of the premier bakeries in the region. And these truffles are they're just wonderful. They're in a one-pound box that has a sort of a silk finish to it. It's got a beautiful ribbon around it. It is the ideal Valentine's Day gift.
Absolutely.
It says love in a way that only cocoa truffles can say it. And, of course, it means you're supporting public radio as well and Main Street. And so for $10 a month as a sustaining member, you get a box of those truffles. $15, you get a couple boxes. $20, you get three. The math continues in a positive way, we hope, but it all starts with you. 1-800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org.
I was at an event this morning where Nicole was speaking, Nicole of Nicole's Fine Pastry, and she talked about growing up on a farm north of Minot and the path from there to becoming really acknowledged as one of the best gourmet entrepreneurs in the state of North Dakota, and how her values growing up on a farm led her to want to have quality ingredients and really put out a really good product, and she has certainly done that. So we are proud to send these truffles out to say thank you to you for your contribution. Of course, we do the programming on the radio, and that keeps it going too. Give us a call or come online and support Prairie Public.
Monday on our show, NDSU's Bill Law will join us to talk about how World War I helped spur the spread of jazz music. And research indicates there may be a health benefit from prebiotic fibers. A business in Walhalla called Food First is developing prebiotic snacks to improve gut health. We'll talk about that. So join us for Main Street on Monday, and check out Main Street Weekend, Sunday morning at 10 Central. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.